Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about perceptions. And I want to talk about video games. Now, I haven't talked much about video games over the years, and when I have spoken about video games, it hasn't been very positive. However, one thing that I've never doubted is the influence and importance of video games. Games are huge. In fact, games are predicted to produce $284 billion in worldwide revenue this year. To put that in perspective, Hollywood's worldwide box office revenues were $33.9 billion in 2023. The NFL had a total revenue of $18 billion in 2022. Games are big business, and like all big business, the video games industry is a patchwork of people, from genuine nerdy gamers to pencil-pushing numbers crunchers to savvy marketers to no-nonsense executives. It takes all kinds, from creatives to money men, to make an industry like video games go. The games themselves, the actual product that actual people like to actually spend their actual time actually playing after actually paying actual money to get, these games are not just products. They are, in fact, actual works of art. They are products, yes. And they are commercial products, yes, but they are also art. Visual, audio, and narrative art meant to help a person escape from real life into a fantasy world for a while and have fun. This means that video games, at least really good video games, are very expensive to create and produce. Games cost millions of dollars to make and sometimes tens and even rarely hundreds of millions of dollars are spent producing these things. Now, with an industry this lucrative, there are bound to be a variety of personages working in and around it. And I don't simply mean people with different skill sets. I mean people who have a variety of motivations. Some people just want to make money, and that's all fine and well. Some people want to make games that are a blast to play, and that's all fine and well. Some people, on the other hand, wish to use video games to affect social change. And there's the rub. Because the reality is that video games are, for better or worse, shapers, and very important shapers of our moral imagination, not only as individuals, but culturally and even globally. The lead story writers of major video games will have a much wider reach to influence people's morality and values than I will ever have. Most preachers not only could never dream of having the kind of influence these people have, but we probably wouldn't know what to do with it if we had it. If you told a theologian that he could have the undivided attention of millions of people for dozens or hundreds of hours, and that he could shape the content howsoever he wanted as long as it was fun to play, I think that he would jump at the chance and then struggle to know what to do. And that's because telling a compelling moral story that's engaging and also communicates a message, but not ham-fistedly, is a much rarer gift than we've given it credit for being. Great storytellers, even competent storytellers, seem to be growing increasingly rare. And sadly, preachers don't always make good poets, and more's the pity. However, and here's where we get to the news of the day, it isn't just Christian preachers who lack imagination when trying to shape the moral imagination. Preachers of wokeism also lack imagination. Progressive fundamentalists are also people who don't know the subtle science and exact art of subtlety. And because their politics are so on the nose, it's hard to miss. And that's bad enough because that's bad art, but it's all the more worrisome because the morals and politics they're pushing are loathsome to wide swaths of the game-playing audience. Enter Sweet Baby Inc. and what's being dubbed Gamergate 2. And here, I'm simply going to offer a brief summary and not read an article because there's no single article that really captures the whole affair in a concise way. So here's what happened. A company called Sweet Baby Inc. exists. It specializes in helping, can you hear the air quotes here? Helping game developers tell their stories in ways that satisfy DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion standards. Their mission, such as it is to tell better, more empathetic stories while diversifying and enriching the video games industry. We aim to make games more engaging, more fun, more meaningful, and more inclusive for everyone. Now, for people who haven't been paying attention, that probably seems rather innocuous and anodyne. They're helping, don't you know? But if you have been paying attention, some of those words stick out like sore thumbs. And the thing is that if they had helped produce games that were more diverse and inclusive and did it in a way that was artistically integrous and didn't drip with a political bias, they probably would have been fine. The problem is that's not what they did. They engaged heavily in what's called race swapping or gender swapping, which is where you take a character that's traditionally white and or male and make him black and or female. They also made a lot of narrative decisions that gamers didn't really care for, and people began to notice. An article published in January pointed out the small but growing discontent with SBI products, and recently a gamer posted on the gaming website Steam a list, just a factual list, of the games that SBI has had a part in. That's it. And here's the shocking thing. SBI felt so threatened by people simply being given a convenient list of products that they worked on that they tried to get Steam to ban that person from using the website. Now, if you're not a gamer, remember that people use Steam and they pay actual money to have a Steam account, and then they use Steam to play actual games for which they paid actual money. SBI decided that they felt so harassed by someone compiling a corporate bibliography that they wanted this person banned from the platform and out his cash, which, you know, to me seems odd. I mean, if someone wanted to make a bibliography of every sermon or article I've ever published, I'd be flattered. No one's ever going to do that, but still, you know, flattered. But SBI wasn't flattered, and one can only guess why they weren't flattered. But it seems to me, and it seems to many in the gaming world, that SBI doesn't want you to know what they've worked on because they know that they have a reputation that isn't particularly positive among their customer base, and they'd prefer to keep helping make games better in secrecy. You know, as most people running businesses honestly do. Wait, what? However, in response to this, the interest in the page SBI Detected, created by the user K.A. Brutus or Ka Brutus, went from just a few followers to hundreds of thousands. And in response to this, everyone lost their minds. Outlets not particularly trusted by many in the hardcore gamer industry put out puff pieces about SBI. But the dam had burst, and people who don't care about video games after all, you know, people like me, began to pay attention. And as we've all learned, paying attention is the gravest of sins. The worst crime you can commit is to notice things. That's why Libs of TikTok has been declared an enemy of the state by the antique media. That's why films like What is a Woman was both so powerful and so derided. You see, let me break down what happens. Far-left progressives, call them woke if you want to, they publish all kinds of stuff on the internet about what they actually think and feel. And then when a person notices and says, that seems weird or creepy or illegal or immoral, the liberal media and all the woke scolds begin a campaign to defend the precious and attack the person who noticed. The problem isn't that they say psychotic and evil things, it's that you had the audacity to notice and disapprove. But that's a story for another day. But what's a story for today is the fact that the more people look into SBI, the more it seems like it's a pretty shady company. Despite its cutesy name and pastel palettes on their website, they are engaged in nothing more nor less than good old-fashioned race hustling. Their CEO has publicly bragged about using mob tactics, for instance. But it's funny how people who brazenly use and encourage mob tactics dislike it when the great unwashed decide to simply stop buying your products. Because, you see, there are mob tactics, like things that organized crime uses, you know, like mafioso, the mob. And then there are mob tactics, as in using cancel culture to try to get individuals or governments or corporations to knuckle under. And both of these are used by the wokesters in the gaming industry because these are basic tradecraft of the race hustler. In fact, these are pretty much the only tactics they have, apart from getting made-up degrees from disreputable programs so that they can engage in intimidation via education, or simply put, credentialism. Although the phony baloney degrees also allow them to secure sinecures, so there's that. And if you're into legalized taxpayer theft via nuisance lawsuits, then academic race hustling might be the thing for you. But these people don't like it when the mob, you know, the mobs of people, as in you, me, and those of us too stupid to secure jobs at the New York Times, when the mob decides that it wants to have a less than favorable opinion about what progressives do and actually have the audacity to say it out loud and plan a boycott, when we do things like that, it must be because we're racist, misogynist, transphobes who are going to get kids killed. And calling people ists and phobes was really effective for a time. But that pony did its one trick one too many times, and the show is played out. People cottoned on to the fact that they're going to be called ists and phobes no matter what, so they might as well not kowtow. Of course, the most cowardly and foolish can still be cowed, but people like that are becoming fewer and fewer. Folks are on to the charade. They've seen the Emperor's nether regions, and they're tired of being hectored into saying it looks like Versace. But alas, the social justice movement came for games, just as it came for Hollywood, education, government, comic books, and everything else. However, gamers had an advantage that other groups didn't have or didn't have to the same degree, and that's that gamers have direct and immediate influence on the success or failure of certain products. That's because, unlike in government or education, gamers are buying a product, and unlike Hollywood or streaming platforms where there are entire networks and there are serious efforts to hide the successes and failures of certain products, games either sell or don't, and Steam monitors how many people are actively playing any game at any given time. That means that gamers and the industry have a really good set of data on what games people play, what they pay for, and what they play over time. Both the preferability and the durability of a product can be known by producer and consumer in real-time ways. There's no relying on journalists to say what's good. There's no need. People can just look at the stats. Everyone can see what games are successful and what games aren't. And what many have said is that they just want politics out of games. Just like people say, keep politics out of movies, or NASCAR, or soft drinks, or whatever. People say that they want zones that are free of politics. Now, some people mean that they don't mind if there are political or social or theological bents to games, as long as their existence in the game is organic and natural and artistically done and not ham-fisted and obnoxious. Others, however, are suggesting that there should be no politics at all. What they want is a neutral public square in the world of video games. They just want neutral. They want default. And there are many, many people in this world, particularly people who have bought the lie that secular democracies are dedicated to creating ideologically neutral public squares, who believe that. But that's a lie. It's always been a lie, and it always will be a lie. As my friend Pastor Logan Feller likes to say, neutrality is a myth. There is no such thing as a neutral public square. And more importantly, for today's purposes, there is no such thing as a politically neutral video game. At least not the kind of games that most people play. If it portrays human behavior, then it cannot be neutral. There will be values and judgments made. They are impossible to avoid. Games are political. What people really mean when they see all the wokery and hate it is not, get politics out of my games. What they actually mean is, I want things to be normal. I want normal things and normal values. I don't want this. I want the pre-transgressive social values. I want society's default settings. And sadly, many, many people have confused society's default settings as neutral. They've assumed, like a fish in water, that concepts such as heteronormativity, sexual monogamy, meritocracy, doing unto others as you would have them do unto you, lex talionis justice, personal moral accountability, individual identity over group identity, etc., are just societal defaults. People think that these are just the normal and natural way people engage with the world, but that just isn't so. The reality is that everything is, in fact, political. Everything is political. Everything is theological. Everything has a bias, including video games. And that's okay, but pretending that there's some sort of objective God's eye view, view from nowhere position, where we can just see things without bias is silly, stupid, impossible, unhelpful, and positively destructive. When people rebel against the forced inclusion of progressive politics and social messaging in their video games, it isn't because they don't want games to be political, it's because they reject the transgressive morality of progressives as being bad art. People resent being told they need to shut up and agree with a thing they find fundamentally disagreeable. Brothers and sisters, friends, the default settings, the apolitical, is not default and it isn't apolitical. It's the society that resulted from Christianity. When people reject progressivism in any sphere, it's because they like the kind of society Christianity creates. Admittedly, it's different than the kind of society Christians create, but there's overlap. And as Christians, we need to take moments like this as opportunities, not just to jump on the bandwagon and dunk on the purple hairs, but to say, hey guys, those values and morals that you see being undermined, they don't just emerge naturally. They come from somewhere, and they must be promoted and believed and defended. They come from Christ. If we do that, we may not get as many viral tweets, but we will do an awful lot more for the kingdom of God. And we may just see some souls saved too. So let's help people see that the values they hate to see undermined come from Jesus. and lead them to Him in humility, love, and faith. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth and Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.